So, welcome back to the Green Room, where we review the latest happenings in cannabis. I'm Martin Lane, the co-founder of Cannabis, and joining me this week is Cannabis Editor at Large, Rhys Cohen.
Howdy.
There was a pregnant pause there.
I'm never sure if I should jump in and say hi or not, or I'm going to tread on someone. So, I'm just, you know, when the news readers do it and they just go,
"Yeah, okay, all right, right, okay." I thought perhaps you'd changed your name.
Yeah, I'm actually Keith Rowan now. So,
I'll amend the script accordingly. And also joining us in the Green Room for the first time, I think, is Cannabis co-founder and chief innovation officer, Kim McKay.
G'day.
There you go. That's your cue to say hello.
I learned from Keith.
Keith is good at that stuff. Okay, right, Keith. Let's start.
Right. I was like, who's Keith? Oh my God, it's me.
Let's start with the biggest talking point of the last few days, which is the Faculty of Pain Medicine's decision to publish guidance for health practitioners recommending against the prescription of medicinal cannabis for the treatment of chronic non-cancer pain, claiming evidence of its efficacy is inconclusive. Now, Dr. Michael Vagg, the dean of the faculty, went even further, saying substances like alcohol are more effective pound for pound, but we don't have extended opening hours at Dan Murphy's for pain patients. Now, as you can imagine, this has caused quite the stir in the industry. I might start with you, Rhys. What's his problem?
I don't know what his problem is. I mean, like the problem is he actually makes a lot of good points, and then reveals himself to be an angry anti-cannabis person by making these disparaging comments, which I think really undermines the quite reasonable arguments, some of them, that he's making, which are, we don't have enough evidence to be confident that medicinal cannabis can treat, you know, various types of chronic non-cancer pain. That's true. The evidence is not there yet. We haven't done it properly, you know, for various reasons, including prohibition, which is a true argument to make. And, you know, it's fine if you, as a pain specialists, say, well, you know, that's not enough evidence for me. You know, let's not do it. But yeah, to come out and say, not only, you know, do we think that there's insufficient evidence to be confident that it can treat chronic non-cancer pain, but any doctor who chooses to prescribe medicinal cannabis for those patients is probably behaving unethically. And any medicinal cannabis patient who's taking their medicine to treat their chronic non-cancer pain is as good as someone who drinks to treat their pain, which I think is quite needlessly personal in their lines of argument.
Yeah, no,
and also, you know, yeah, there are plenty of good reasons to prescribe medicinal cannabis in the absence of convincing evidence, which I've, you know, went through that article.
There's a couple of points I wanted to make on that. First of all, you sort of the suggestion that he kind of implied or stated that doctors that are prescribing medicinal cannabis are acting unethically. Do you think he went that far?
Well, what he said in his conversation article was doctors are allowed to prescribe whatever they want to their patients. That's, you know, their prerogative. That is ethical to do if you have scientific evidence to justify your decision. We don't have scientific evidence to justify prescribing medicinal cannabis. Therefore, anyone who's prescribing medicinal cannabis to patients with chronic non-cancer pain is not behaving ethically, is the implication of that.
And I guess that was my other sort of question, really, was just around, it felt like it went beyond, yeah, it felt like someone with an axe to grind, I think is probably the way I'd put it. I mean, do we know much about this guy? Has he got form in this regard?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, he's been, right, you know, been out with these opinions before, which is fine. Like, you know, he's the dean of the, you know, of this, of the Faculty of Medicine and the, you know, College of Anaesthetists must have a position on medicinal cannabis. It seems entirely appropriate that he should be commenting about this and providing his expert opinion. Totally normal for that to happen. But to do it in such a belligerent way that really kind of like denigrates people, I think is a bit unnecessary and a bit petty.
Kim, I might bring you in here, sort of wearing your PR and crisis communications hat. And the reason being, I spoke to Dr. Joel Wren this week, who's the VP of the Society of Cannabis Clinicians. And he was saying it's just, you know, it's just set us so far back because, you know, you've got GPs who are kind of coming round or considering that they might think about medicinal cannabis, but, you know, had a bit of a hurdle to get over and were worried that, you know, that this was the thing that kind of, even, oh, well, I won't touch it now, you know. So, you know, he was really quite frustrated at the damage that this could potentially do. And look, you know, it's been all over the news. I mean, the amount of, you know, news organisations that picked this up, you know, since the piece in The Conversation was first published. So what's the kind of, from an industry sort of perspective, what's the best practice when it comes to kind of managing these sort of claims when they kind of go semi-viral, I guess?
Yeah, to that point, I don't think I've been forwarded an article in the last year more than that one. I don't know if that was the case with both of you as well, but it reminded me again of the power of publicity and the power of press. And I think the best practice is, as an industry, we shouldn't be surprised that there's naysayers out there. So it's being prepared for that. So whether that's your industry bodies have their answers ready. And I think where industries like ours can kind of get tripped up is they fight science with science. Everyone forgets the consumer in this bit. At the end of the day, all people are going to remember is that medicinal cannabis is bad and I should just drink more. That, from a consumer understanding, they're the two points that hit in that article, I think. So we can't go back and argue about evidence and what evidence base is. The consumer gets lost in all of that. We've got to go back with speedy but powerful, transparent messaging that just talks about the efficacy and the safety and stop. That's what, you know, best practice would
suggest. You know
what,
that's really interesting because I guess I've got two points on that. One being people I spoke to were saying the opposite of what you've just said. You know, we've got all this evidence. We should kind of, you know, we should get out there and sort of show that there are, you know, plenty of kind of examples of patients who, you know, have had a positive outcome. There is some, you know, some evidence which may not be up to the standards that kind of doctors have been used to in the past, but it's still impactful. So that's one point. And I guess on that, you know, I wonder whether actually it's the kind of human interest stories that really might cut through, you know, the personal kind of stories that people tell, which might have a bigger impact than, as you say, fighting science with science. But the other bit of frustration I was picking up from people was just, you know, and this is entirely kind of typical, but, you know, the quote about Dan Murphy's just got shared everywhere because it was such a good soundbite. And it's that, you know, yeah, it's that just, you know, it's such an annoying thing that this is a nuanced argument that you know, can't be captured in a single sentence. As you say, Reese, it's a completely inflammatory thing to say. But of course it gets picked up because, you know, that's the thing that people remember. So, yeah, I wonder whether that might be the, you know, actually putting those human interest stories out there to counteract some of these claims might be more effective than, as you say, sort of fighting science with science. What do we think is going to happen next with this? Is this sort of, you know, to use a really old-fashioned phrase, is this fish and chip paper now, or do we think this one's going to run and run?
I don't think so. It depends if someone wants to keep, if he has enjoyed this moment of fame, he may want to keep fanning the flames. We might do it as an industry, but I don't think it's got a huge amount of legs. It just seems to be one of those peaks that our industry seems to happen quite a bit. A bit of TGA news flash, this study. That's what I see happening.
And definitely in terms of like the media and like, you know, your average Australian consuming content 100%. But like this is now on NPS Medicine Wise, you know, website. Like, you know, it's an authoritative document produced by an authoritative organization that many doctors probably do pay attention to, even if they don't necessarily swallow it hook, line, and sinker. So I think it'll probably end up being an impediment, a pretty significant impediment, but, you know, water will flow around it because guess what? Like most doctors, the vast majority of doctors prescribing medicinal cannabis in Australia aren't pain specialists, they're GPs. And, you know, GPs pay close attention to their patients and understand what's going on with their lives. And I think are more convincible than specialists might be.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, isn't it? On the one hand, you know, you kind of think, well, let it go, it's done, it's gone. And maybe from a consumer kind of press point of view, that
and I just, yeah, to me, and I guess just for me to qualify my comments, that's exactly where I'm coming from. You know, having read this in, you know, a consumer publication the first time, my comments are very much how we help the consumer be educated. Definitely a different way to play this in the industry space where the science has a role to play.
And I should probably point out for viewers, I don't know whether it's the case for everybody, but Kim has frozen at this point, but we can still hear your voice. So your very eloquent points that you just made were all made without you moving your lips, which was quite a skill.
I mean, how cool is that? And I'm still doing it.
It's brilliant. It's a bit weird, but it's working. So I think we'll just press on. But yeah, no, absolutely.
And I don't know if you can hear that whining in the background. Someone's just decided to start construction work near me, but. Can you hear that coming through?
There's a light whistling, but I think we'll get away with it. Yeah, no, I think just to go back to that point, I think that's right. There's a role for the industry to obviously have ongoing dialogue with the medical community. That's self-evident and happening all the time anyway. But in terms of actually kind of fanning the flames of the story from a consumer point of view, it feels like it's kind of best left in the rearview mirror. But yeah, definitely. Certainly one that's you know, we had our biggest day of traffic yesterday and, you know, as a result of that story. So I don't think I'm in the position of thanking Dr. Vag, but certainly it does show you that it had a big impact on the industry as well as other people.
And thankfully we have people like Cease who will kind of give us the balanced argument and view.
Correct. Yeah, it was a great opinion piece, actually. I really enjoyed reading that. I thought you'd gone quiet on Wednesday morning. and then that landed in my inbox. It was like a little gift.
That's so funny. And Martin messaged me and said, I'm trying to get some comments for this story. Have you got anything? I'm like, actually, I have.
As if by magic, here's 1,500 words. Oh, thanks very much for that. Okay, all right, on the topic of great opinion pieces, Kim, you wrote a piece about our Women in Cannabis initiative this week, which kind of giving a bit more context to the campaign. But for those who kind of haven't read it, can you know tell us what inspired you to launch Women in Cannabis?
I guess what inspires me to launch anything, I have an idea and people say no, so I do it anyway. Look, I think from the very minute I got into this industry, started picking up the phone to people and just was welcomed and people were interested in what we were about to set out to do. On reflection, the first four phone calls I made, three of them were to women who just happened to be leading the way in this business. And it just made me incredibly proud to be stepping in to this industry. And when we sort of floated the idea of women in cannabis, there was a lot of, you know, we had debate, we spoke to people and I said, we don't need a voice. We've already got enough women. We're good. Go away. Do this in the other industries you play in. But it just sort of felt like that's not enough of a reason to not do something. We've got to ensure that these bold and brave women who've got this industry where it is today, that those trailblazers, that continues to happen and that we don't sort of end up becoming like the rest of corporate Australia, I guess. Martin, you and I were chatting about it earlier in the week, and we know as the money does flood into this industry, when it lives up to its promise, we could end up looking like corporate Australia, which only has 32% of females on ASX listed boards. And that hasn't changed in 2 years. So it's our way of, you know, showcasing how great this industry is, but ensuring that we can continue that pattern.
Yeah, and I mean, it was interesting that you kind of set out a few kind of things that we will endeavour to do. Obviously, one of them being making sure that we have, you know, female voices on the website and you know, on any panels that we run, etc. What other sort of things are you thinking about? You know, I think it's important because one of the sort of bits of feedback we had was, you know, this doesn't mean you're just going to you know, put a badge on any stories about women, does it? And it's like, no, you know, we want to bake this into the company and the organization, and then through that bake it into the, you know, or help bake it into the industry. So what other things have you kind of got in your head?
And I'm glad we got that feedback, because it sort of made us be transparent and show everyone, because I think we would have just kept that very internal. But as we scale as a business, we want to make sure that big decisions are made, you know, with women involved in those decisions. So as we go to build our events and different divisions, that we take a lot of diverse opinions into view. As we take on future investment, just putting a hint out there to future investors, you know, as we work with consultants, we want to make sure that there's women well represented in people who advise us and people who invest in us. And then our PR team are going to work really hard to get the message out to corporate Australia about this industry. So we're going to put a bit of our own skin in the game to show how good this industry is for women, and hopefully shine a spotlight on them, but also show the rest of Australia how it can be done.
Okay, well, I think the feedback that I've had since your article was published has been really positive. And yeah, I think it's about walking the walk, really, isn't it? You know, Reese and I chatted, you know, two blokes.
I watched it.
two white blokes had a chat about this a couple of weeks ago. And you know, I think we were, it was when I first learned about the term mannels, which I still enjoy and makes me smile. But yeah, I think it's about kind of making sure that you're kind of, you're always top of mind, that you're not kind of, you know, inadvertently kind of, you know, baking in male privilege along the way. And it's interesting your point about, you know, when money comes, what does that mean, and how will that change things? Because we talked about, you know, some of the industry development being driven by carers, often women, and making sure that we don't kind of, you know, it's a bit like we were talking about before, you know, there's the science, and the science is obviously really important. But ultimately, I think the thing that kind of gets us all really passionate about the industry is the human kind of stories that you hear about, and the impact that cannabis can have on people's lives, and, you know, alleviating, you know, some pretty miserable circumstances at times. So I think it's sort of all part of that, really, that we don't, you know, we don't just become, as you say, another kind of corporate industry that's all about, you know, the bottom line, and remember why we're all here, which is ultimately to make people's lives more comfortable. Let's move on. Finally, I wanted to chat about New York, actually. So it looks like New York will be giving the green light, Reese, little pun for you there.
Sure.
So legalising recreational cannabis in the next few days. So lawmakers have reached agreement on the issue and are putting the final touches to a bill that would create a new regulatory agency for cannabis and related products, and decriminalise possession up to 3 ounces by people aged 21 and over. And it's got the support of beleaguered Governor Andrew Cuomo, who dubbed it his top priority this year as part of a plan to increase tax revenue. Reese, we've chatted a bit about this before. What do you think this means for the sort of global campaign to legalize recreational cannabis?
It's one of the biggest, it will be when it does happen, because it hasn't happened yet, and don't count chickens, because this is cannabis and anything could happen. And we've had false starts in New York before. But it does look promising. Yeah, seems very likely that it will go through in some way, shape or form. And, you know, New York City is one of the bigger dominoes left in the US. I mean, like, you know, after San Fran and LA and Arizona, you know, like, you know, Las Vegas, you know, these are all places with recreational cannabis that has been legalized in the last few years. New York's next. That's, you know, that's most of the major population centers, like the super urban population centers in North America now with legalized recreational cannabis. Well, excluding Mexico, that's yet to come online. But it's a sign of the times, for sure. I think what's really cool about the New York proposal, which is, you know, not finalized yet, is that it's actually going to put in public consumption venues or consumption venues off the bat, which is something that you would assume should be in most US jurisdictions, but it's actually really rare. Like, there's only like two or three other places that allow licensed cannabis consumption venues, which makes it really hard if you're like living in, you know, for example, high-rise, you know, rental accommodation in New York City. You know, you're just going to really irritate your landlords or your upstairs neighbors. You know, it's cold outside and you know, you're not going to go out in the street. So that's really cool. I like that. And 3 ounces, 3 ounces possession is a decent amount of cannabis. Like it seems quite reasonable, the proposal as it stands at the moment.
Yeah, it's funny,
so yeah, that'll be nice.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. A couple of things. One being obviously New York is kind of, you know, a real kind of travel hub. You know, I know we're still sort of, you know, not quite out of COVID yet, but it will be somewhere that it feels like people will, you know, people go to New York. It's a yeah. real kind of tourist destination. And the fact that it's going to be, you know, there are going to be venues, feels like it, you know, it will get a bit of that kind of, you know, Amsterdam vibe potentially.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
But yeah. You're right to point out, as you always are, that this isn't a done deal yet. And obviously I sort of alluded to it, you know, Cuomo's had his own problems, numerous accusations of sexual harassment by female colleagues, and claims that he bungled the state's response to COVID-19. Do his fortunes make any difference, or has this got enough momentum now that if he did have to stand down, for example, it would still likely go through, do you think?
I mean, 2/3 of Americans support legalizing recreational cannabis, including half of all Republicans. That's consistent. Sort of, I mean, those are national figures. I'm sure in New York, public support is even higher than that. So, yeah, I mean, it's just a matter of time, really. Cuomo or no.
Talking of Cuomo or no, Kim, I guess we won't be inviting him to join Women in Cannabis anytime soon.
Probably not, but we're not just women-centred. Men are allowed to come and support women anytime they like. We welcome them.
Okay, I should point out that Andrew
Speaking
Cuomo,
to
obviously...
you.
Thank you. I should point out that Andrew Cuomo hasn't actually, you know, these are allegations that he's denying, so I should just point that out. But it feels like there might be, you know, things might be moving in a certain direction. But as you say, Reese, if that is unlikely to derail moves in New York, then that's all for the good. I think that's probably just about all we have time for this week. So thanks for joining us. I'm going to actually go outside and try to enjoy some Sydney sunshine this afternoon, because we haven't seen much of that lately. It's been biblical.
Good.
How about you, Reese? What's the weekend looking like for you?
Pretty busy, I think. Friend's birthday, going go-karting, try not to maim myself.
Yeah. You stay safe.
Yeah, I will. How about you, Kim? What are you up to?
I plan to have an excellent weekend, but that's because I've never had a bad one. So
you can just tell she's in PR, can't you? It's just like, you know.
No, do you know what it is? I'll tell you what it is. That office hangover when you go into the office on Monday and everyone says, how was your weekend? Nothing annoys me more because A, I don't think they care, and B, I couldn't be bothered telling you. So I've sort of always had this standing answer whenever someone says, how was your weekend? Excellent. Never had a bad one. Shut up. So it's kind of a hangover from my old office days, I think.
Reflex.
Good to know. I will never bother to ask you how
never
you
ask
was
me.
Ever again. All right, guys. Thank you for your time, and we'll chat next week.
See ya.
Cheers.
Bye.